Today's intro, narrated by Curtis Hildreth, is directly quoted from the Los Angeles Times in an article named Valium Had Many Ancestors and a Rolling Stone song called Mommy's Little Helper. I'm Darlene, and you're listening to Hard Times and True Crimes.
By the end of the 1960s, Valium was the top-selling psychotropic drug in the country. And in the 70s, it became the most widely prescribed drug of any kind. Like the sedative known as Milltown, Valium was everywhere. Mike Brady popped a couple on the television show The Brady Bunch, and the Rolling Stones composed a song about the drug, dubbing it Mother's Little Helper. Now, like Phil Collins, I can't sing, so I'll read you the lyrics. What a drag it is getting old. Kids are different today, I hear every mother say. Mother needs something today to calm her down. And though she's not really ill, there's a little yellow pill. She goes running for the shelter of her mother's little helper. And it helps her on her way, get her through her busy day. Life's just too much today, I hear every mother say. The pursuit of happiness just seems a bore. And if you take more of those, you will get an overdose. No more running for the shelter of a mother's little helper. They just helped you on your way through your busy, dying day.
Margie Velma Bullard was born in Cumberland County, in North Carolina, in 1932. She was the second oldest of nine children, and as you can imagine, money was pretty tight for a family of that size, especially in the 30s. Velma described her childhood as being one of always being afraid. Her father, Murphy, was a short-tempered man, quick to explode over the smallest of infractions, and everyone in the house was afraid of him, including Velma's mother, Lily. He was also an alcoholic, and when he came home drunk, things quickly escalated into violent rages, with Murphy throwing things, beating the kids, especially Velma and her older brother, Olive, with anything he could find, including big sticks or belts. Years later, when Velma reflected back on her childhood, she never understood why her mother put up with it, and worse, why she allowed it to happen to the children. She once asked her why she didn't leave him, and her mother's reply was, "I didn't have nowhere to go if I did leave him."
I feel like, because wasn't that during the Depression?
Yes.
I feel like a lot of women felt like they were in that position. And I know that both of my great grandfathers who, you know, lived during the Depression were both alcoholics and were both abusive to their wives.
Yeah, it feels like it was probably a pretty common thing, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Yeah. And remember, this was the 30s when women kept the home while the man provided.
Right.
So it's not like it would have been easy to just pick up nine children and leave on your own.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's hard even these days. I imagine it seemed like an impossibility. But also, as a mother myself, yeah. I find it hard to think, well, how could you not find the courage to protect your children better?
Maybe, though, it was kind of a choice between starving to death or staying, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's easy to judge another person's choice when you haven't walked that road.
Right.
For sure.
Especially during the Depression.
Right.
Things were really hard.
Right. And see, we really have no idea how hard because we did not live through the Depression.
Right.
Right. Well, this was also during a time when people kept their problems to themselves. Mm-hmm. And Velma did just that. It's not a time when you could just go see a doctor or a therapist. Or, unlike today, you couldn't just get on the internet and find a counselor.
Right.
And even have an appointment right there on your phone. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like this is a good spot for a BetterHelp ad.
Right.
Like, I should have called them and said, hey, will you sponsor this episode?
Exactly.
So it is sad, though, that Velma didn't have anybody she could confide in about her home life because she also had another secret bottled up. When she was just 13 years old, she was out of school sick one day with the flu, and her daddy came into her room and raped her. I know. So horrible. And her mother actually was right outside in the yard when that happened and apparently was just unaware of it. Oh. And it just hurts my heart to think of her enduring that and not having anybody to tell.
Right.
Velma said that she didn't think her mom would believe her, or she was afraid her mom would think she wanted it to happen, which is just, that makes me, you know, just hurts my heart. So, you know, as a 13-year-old, she felt very confused, and she was as afraid of her dad, but she did love him, and she craved his affection as well.
Right.
So she felt very torn and ashamed that she still loved him even after that happened. And so as a child, it was just hard for her to sort through those feelings and emotions. And of course, that did stay with her all of her life.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That will mess you up.
It will. Absolutely. Well, as she got older, she started to date. And that actually caused more problems at home and fights with her parents. Mm-hmm. You know, they were strict. And so finally, one day she met Thomas Burke at the Baptist church where she was going with friends. And she started dating him. And her dad was angry about it. He didn't like Thomas very much from the beginning. But Velma ended up joining that church and getting baptized there. And her family would go to church occasionally. Sometimes for a while, they would go regularly.
Right.
But, you know, she said at home, sometimes they would sing hymns or they'd go to singings. They quoted Bible verses. But in her words, there was not much religion or religious teaching at home. She actually alluded to it being an act that they put on.
Oh, okay.
Since her dad was resistant to her dating Thomas, and he kept putting obstacles in the way, like a really early curfew, she became more determined than ever to see him, as is the way of teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
And she just dreamed of escaping her home life, you know. So one Thursday night in 1949, after she and Thomas had been seeing each other for a while, they went out on a date and they eloped.
Okay.
But afterwards, after they got married, he dropped her off at home just like a normal date. He took her back home.
And oh, my goodness.
She got out of the car and went in the house. And she waited until Saturday morning to tell her parents.
Oh, my goodness.
But just as she had feared, it created a firestorm. Her daddy erupted. He threatened to take her to have it annulled. He yelled. He screamed. But finally, in the end, he just realized he had to accept it. There wasn't really anything he could do about it.
That reminds me of the movie Great Balls of Fire with Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yes, I had forgotten about that.
When he married Myra. Exactly the same thing happened.
Yep. So after you know, her dad accepted it, they moved in with her husband's family just a few days later. So she had finally escaped her bad home life. And she later admitted that that really was her main reason for getting married at all. Interestingly, too, she also said in a book that she wrote that her dad was never mean to her again after that, that he never threatened her anymore or anything. And she said he was like a different man.
Wow.
And in other sources that I read, at some point he did undergo some type of a conversion. And she said he was a great grandfather to her children. And like when she would spank the kids and stuff like that, he would stop her and say, "That's enough." Or like he was just like a totally different person.
Yes. I wonder if she grew to like, it sounds like she always loved him, but I wonder if she grew to like really like forgive him and love him.
Yeah. Keep listening, okay. And you will find out, because okay. We are going to talk about that. I didn't delve into her dad's story that much, but there are definitely some layers to this story that we'll talk about that will cover some of that as well.
Okay.
So even though she admitted that she did mostly marry just in order to escape her home life, her marriage started out pretty happy. Of course, being so young, and they had to quit school and get a job, but they didn't have a lot of money in those early years of marriage. But wasn't long, she and Thomas shortly became pregnant. And they had a little baby boy named Ronnie. And then just within a couple more years, they had a daughter named Kim. Also, Velma wrote that it was during that time that she also found that she had learned to love her husband. Yeah.
That's good. So, okay.
She was a good mother, and she took her children to church, attended more regularly than she ever had. In fact, she became involved with many church activities and at one point even taught Sunday school. She said if she was asked what she believed, she could have given all the right answers, But deep down, she didn't really think that God could love her.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So things were mostly good in her little family life until a few years into it, she ended up having to have a hysterectomy due to some female issues that she was having. She was around 30 years old by that time. And she never really felt that she needed that surgery. And she also said later that she felt it really did have an effect on her nerve and anxiety issues.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. I relate to Velma in a lot of ways.
Okay, so you can kind of probably see where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. So it was around this time that her husband, Thomas, he started drinking after work with his buddies. He would go hang out with them at the bar before he came home. And it was happening more and more often. And things in the marriage started to crumble a little bit, started getting hard. Mm-hmm. And Velma had always told herself she would not marry a drunk. Her dad's drinking had caused her so much grief as a child, and she did not want that for her kids. So she began nagging Thomas about his drinking. And as you can imagine, a lot of marital fights ensued, and it kind of started this vicious cycle. As things escalated at home, there came a day when Velma passed out. And Thomas was not able to help her because he was drunk.
Oh, my goodness.
Her son got her father, and he came and he took her to the hospital. And while she was there, Velma, she couldn't talk to anybody without just bursting into tears. It was uncontrollable crying. And so her doctor diagnosed her with a nervous breakdown. And he prescribed her a tranquilizer. Then, most likely it was Valium, which would begin an addiction that lasted years for Velma. And it started her down a path of lying, manipulating her family members and her doctors, stealing, and all sorts of problems that stemmed from that.
What a tragedy. You know, yeah. I've heard it said that we're just a car wreck away from an addiction.
Oh, it's interesting that you said that, because actually one other event that happened in her life was one night. Her parents had taken them somewhere, and she and her husband, Thomas, were getting out of the car, and another car came around the corner and sideswiped in them and hit them, and that hit Velma. And she had to go to the hospital, and she had some, you know, problems from that, some injuries. Sure. And they ended up giving her some meds from that as well. And that also played into the addiction that she had.
And back then, nerve issues with women were always, I guess the remedy for that was always, you know, barbiturates.
Right.
Valium, or that's what she was, you know, yeah. That's what she was.
So when you think about those lyrics that you read at the beginning of the show, and now we see that this Valium is what, you know, has started Velma down this road, this story really gets kind of crazy at times. Thomas's drinking was causing problems at home. He was losing job after job, and Velma was just trying to keep her head above water. She didn't have a problem getting doctors to prescribe all kinds of medications for her problems. At this point now, she's getting prescriptions for sleeping pills, barbiturates, stimulants, and a host of many other drugs. And by now, it is the mid-60s, and the doctors, they still felt that Valium was just pretty safe.
Right. Like
they prescribed that pretty readily. We did not yet know how addictive Valium could be or how dangerous it could be when you took it along with other commonly prescribed drugs. And because of the nature of addiction, once Velma would get accustomed to what she was taking, she would up her dosage, take a little more, and
probably run out.
Right.
And then go to the doctor and get more.
Yep. Because she would need more to keep that calm, peaceful feeling. And it would take more and more to do that. So it was building on itself. She was tripling her dosage and still needing more and taking it more often and mixing it with other pills. And she was able to go to several doctors and get prescriptions without them realizing what she was doing. And so that went on for years. And now she was just as addicted to her pills as Thomas was to the alcohol. And he would sometimes point that out when she was nagging about the drinking. He would say, "You're just as bad on your pills as I am on my drink. Mm-hmm. And so things were just rough. So there came a day in 1969 when Thomas came home one morning from the night shift. He had gone out drinking that morning, and when he got off work, like he was prone to do. And as he stumbled into the house, he could barely walk. He went to bed, and Velma, shortly after that, she left to go to the laundromat. And when she returned home, the house was in smoke. So they called the fire department, and when the fire department arrived, they found the house full of smoke. They did what they do, and then they came out and told Velma that it was too late. Thomas was gone.
Oh, my goodness. He got drunk and burned the house down.
Yeah. Yeah. They told Velma that Thomas had fallen asleep, or more likely passed out, with a cigarette in his mouth, which had started the fire, and that he had died of smoke inhalation. Velma was distraught, and she felt guilty that she had not been at home to prevent it. And so at the hospital, she was offered a shot of something to help her get through the trauma, which she readily accepted. She said she didn't feel anything for days. She was numb.
She was in shock, I would imagine.
Yeah. And then the medication's making her more numb.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And that was already her way of dealing with life. The dependence on drugs just to get her through the next day and the next day without feeling anything.
Right.
And her children, who were by then in high school, they were not oblivious to this. They realized there was a problem, and they tried to help her. They actually spoke to her doctor, and he kind of blew them off. And sometimes they would, like, hide her medicine from her or throw it away, but nothing worked because Velma had it hidden everywhere all over the house, and she was always able to go to another doctor and get more.
Right. And she was grown. I mean, they couldn't keep her from doing what she wanted to do.
That's exactly right. Shortly after Thomas's death, Velma began seeing a man named Jennings Barfield. He was the widower of a former workmate of Velma's. And although her children were not happy about it, because it was pretty soon,
right,
the couple soon decided they were going to get married. And that was only about 16 months after their father had passed away. And Jennings was also 16 years older than their mom, and he had his own health problems, which required a lot of care. Velma was only 38 at the time, and he was 54.
Oh my, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was quite the age difference. And I can imagine that that would be hard as, you know, as a kid to see your mom move on so quick. I'm sure they love their dad.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and they're in high school, so, you know. Right.
And they're not seeing her grief probably because...
Right.
I mean, she's doped up.
Exactly. But since she was forging ahead with the new marriage in spite of their concerns, they kind of just hoped that that would make her happier and then maybe she would be able to kick her addictions.
Okay.
So they were thinking, okay, well, maybe this will just be what it takes.
They were hopeful.
That wasn't the case. In fact, things got much worse when Velma was burdened with the care of Jennings and all his health problems. So shortly after the wedding, Velma accidentally overdosed. And Jennings ended up taking her to her parents' house because he just couldn't deal with it. And her son, he ended up having a heart-to-heart talk with her about her behavior. And so she promised she was going to do better. And so Jennings, he came back for her and took her back home to his house. And it wasn't long after that, she overdosed again. Well, Jennings also had a daughter, and she was in high school. And she lived with him and Velma at the time. And she was concerned because, like, her dad was not even good enough help, enough health to help with Velma. He didn't even have the strength to, like, pick her up when she would pass out and stuff. In fact, she really should have been caring for him. So they, I mean, it was just a bad situation all the way around. And then with her overdosing two more times during a short period of time, I'm telling you, she overdosed so many times that I lost count. Over the course of this story.
Well, I don't know how she functioned, because didn't it say she worked and stuff?
Well, it was a very spotty work record.
Gotcha.
She would work until she would get fired, and then she'd find another job and that kind of thing. Sometimes those overdoses were accidental, but other times they were purposeful. I mean, it's just a whole ball of mess. Yeah, it really was. But Jennings, he's at the end of his rope. So he starts considering divorce. He had finally realized the extent of Velma's addiction. Also, around this same time, Velma's son Ronnie had enlisted, and his enlistment date was coming up soon. And Velma could never come to grips with Ronnie being away from her, even for short periods of time. So she was not happy about that enlistment. So she's miserable in her marriage with Jennings. Everything in her life just seems to be falling apart. And then Velma just couldn't take any more. Dennings had made an appointment for the following Monday because he was going to speak to a lawyer about divorce. But he never made it to that appointment. He had become very sick over the weekend and had to be taken to the hospital.
Oh.
Velma had bought a bottle of ant and roach poison and given it to him.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, she told herself it was just to make him sick. And he did get sick. He became violently sick shortly after that, vomiting, difficulty breathing. And by the next morning, Jennings Barfield was deceased.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay, did she love him? Was she doing this because she was, like, desperate to keep him? Or was she doing it because she was angry?
Your guess is as good as mine, and I think as good as Velma's, because she says that during those years, she was not in her right mind, and she really doesn't know what she was thinking.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my, but murder?
Yeah, I know. I know. And nobody had any reason to suspect her as the cause of that. And a lot of people, you know, they felt sorry for her because Velma has endured so much. She just lost her first husband. Her son's going away.
Sure. She's probably getting all kind of sympathy.
Right. And then Jennings now has passed away suddenly. And so, you know, they're like thinking poor Velma. And then Velma even told herself, well, it was just his weak heart that had given out. It really wasn't her actions that had caused his death. And so then she started up her pattern. She numbed herself with more pills and went on with life. Shortly after that event, she really started pressuring her son, Ronnie, not to go to basic training. Well,
wow.
You know, that's not just something you can decide not to do.
Right.
Once you're committed, you're committed.
You're in there. Yeah.
You don't have a choice. It just doesn't work that way. But Velma had never wanted to be away from Ronnie for any length of time. And she just really relied on him more than what's normal.
Like a codependent relationship?
Very.
Okay.
Very.
And was he codependent with her as well?
I'll let you decide.
Okay.
As I tell more of the story.
Okay.
I'll let you decide. She began telling him, I can't cope with Jennings' death on my own. I've been through so much. I need you here. And so he began trying to see if he could delay his enlistment.
Okay. Then, yeah, he's codependent too.
And he used his mother's issues to try and convince the Army.
Well, she was manipulating him and he was.
Very.
And he was buying it.
Uh-huh. Well, since Jennings' death, Velma and Kim, her daughter, had moved back into Velma's house, the one that had burned before. It didn't burn completely down. It had been repaired. And so they moved back into the house. After they moved back in, a mysterious break-in took place in which Ronnie's room had been broken into. And some of Ronnie's things were destroyed. And it was just a very curious type
that sounds
thing.
Like...
And Velma turned it into her insurance. And then, if that wasn't enough, not long after that, the house burned again.
Okay, so Velma's getting used to this money. Maybe that was her motive, because she probably got insurance for her first husband's death with the fire. And then now the second, and now we're having these break-ins. Okay, her motive is becoming a little clearer to me now.
All right, and as I tell the story, you may or may not change your mind. We'll see. So she comes home once again to find fire trucks there. And she fell apart and she continued to plead with Ronnie, you got to come home, that, you know, everything's just happening.
Drama queen.
Yes. So dutiful as ever, Ronnie began the red tape of trying to get a hardship discharge from the Army. And Velma continued her pattern of overdosing, claiming after one incident that it was because she couldn't handle her son going off to Vietnam and being killed. So eventually, Ronnie was able to obtain a solution that calmed her down a little bit. While he was not able to get discharged, he was able to get reassigned to Fort Bragg, which was pretty close to home. They lived in Lumberton, North Carolina.
Okay, so he was close.
Yeah, I think it was like less than an hour. And even while that was happening, Velma ended up losing her house to foreclosure, and her dad died.
Wow.
So the catalyst for her next overdose was not either of those events, though. It was hearing that Ronnie was going to get married and, surprisingly, was being moved from Fort Bragg ultimately to a base in Germany.
Oh, I bet she did not like any girlfriend that he had, probably.
Well, I don't think he had a lot of, like, I think that was probably his first, like, real serious girlfriend. And no, Velma was not about that.
I can imagine.
And now that her son was going to be leaving her in more ways than one, Velma succumbed to another overdose of meds once again. She definitely had an unhealthy expectation of her son and her relationship. That created ripples, well, really waves of problems for Ronnie in his personal life for many years to come. I can't figure out if she was just that manipulative or if she truly just didn't want to live, if he couldn't, you know, be with her. I don't know if she was overdosing on purpose just to garner that sympathy and that drama.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's
she's, a big possibility.
She's very manipulative, so it's just hard to tell. But either way, those guilt trips that she put her son through, they were just messed up. Well, at the point that her house was foreclosed on and everything, she moves back in with her mother. And that's a strained relationship. She had a pretty good relationship with her dad after she moved out of the house. And he, like she said, he was, you know, a good grandfather to her kids.
That's interesting.
I know. It is really weird. But she's very bitter and angry toward her mother for not protecting them. So is in itself is a little odd.
That is odd. But I guess you have to have somebody to blame.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes her mama would talk about the good old days. And Velma said those were not good old days, right? Okay. And so that made her a little angry. Also, her mother was constantly nitpicking her and putting her down. And it made her feel, you know, less than. So that's, you know, that mother-daughter relationship was more, I guess it was
strained.
It was, yeah. Her mother just criticized her and belittled her a lot, according to Velma. So the living arrangement, being at home with her mom, really was not good for her. And it just seemed like no matter where Velma's at, she can't catch a break. Seems like trouble just follows her. She also was needing more money for her prescriptions because she can't keep a job.
Okay.
Because of the drug addiction. And so she would be like, oh, I'm running out of money and prescriptions. I got to find a way to pay for them. So she fraudulently got a loan in her mom's name in order to pay for some more prescriptions. Even used her mother's home as collateral for that fraudulent loan. She admits that with all the drugs in her system at that point, she did not really even give any thought to that loan having to be repaid.
Oh,
so
goodness.
As soon as those payments came due and Velma realized, oh, I don't have any way to pay this. And her mother started getting late payment notices in the mail. And so she would start questioning, like, I don't have a loan. What's this for? And so it appeared that Velma was about to get found out.
Uh-oh.
Just as before, it's not hard to believe that Velma took matters into her own hands.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. What is hard to believe is that she was able to do that with her own mom. But in her current state of mind, the solution seemed simple and easy.
Oh, my goodness.
While she was at the pharmacy to pick up her meds, she spotted a bottle of ant and roach poison, and she bought it. And she convinced herself it was just to make her mom sick until she could figure out a way to pay those loans. So shortly after arriving home, she gave her mother that poison.
Oh, my gracious.
And of course, shortly after that, her mother began vomiting, having diarrhea, and suffering terrible stomach cramping. And once more, Velma convinced herself that her mother's suffering was not due to her actions, that it was something totally not related to that poison she had just given her. And her mother was eventually taken to the hospital, and shortly after that, she passed away.
Oh, that's so sad.
It is. And the doctors thought it was a massive heart attack. But Velma's guilt did hit her hard, and she was so worried that they would know that she had given her mother that poison. But they didn't know. And even they did do an autopsy on her, and it didn't catch it. Didn't catch
really?
The arsenic in her system.
I wonder if it was guilt, though, or like fear of being found out.
Probably a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Velma was actually able to continue her lies to herself that her actions had not actually caused that heart attack. And when magically, she never heard any more about those loans either. Because apparently when her mother's estate was settled, the loans were just paid all in with everything else. Nobody really questioned it, I guess.
How convenient.
Yep. And so nobody mentioned the forgery or anything. And so Velma had gotten away with that.
Again.
All the while, Velma's children, now young adults and both married, were struggling to help her with that addiction. They could see the grip it had on her, and they tried everything they knew to help. But when they would confront her about it, she would get defensive.
Right.
Then That's she would,
what addicts do.
Yep. And then she would feel remorseful, and then she would deny it. She went through all of those, you know, symptoms of that kind, like you said, just what addicts do. Velma was desperate to get more medications to numb her pain and now her guilt. And so now she ends up writing some bad checks, forging some, stealing some from people that she knew and that kind of thing. And she did actually eventually get arrested for those bad checks, and she served 4 months incarcerated for those.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
And as soon as she was out, she went and got a prescription filled and overdosed on it.
Oh, my goodness.
But when the threat of being sent to a halfway house was presented to her, she did not want to go back to being locked up at all, even in a halfway house. So she begged and pleaded with her daughter not to make her go. And so she talked them out of it. Sometime after this, Velma took a job as a caregiver with an elderly couple. Prior to that, she had mainly worked in retail, like stores and things like that. So that she gets a job as a caregiver. This couple was named Montgomery and Dolly Edwards. And that was in exchange for room and board and a $75 a week payment.
Was this, you said this was an elderly couple?
Yes.
Oh, I don't like where this is
right.
Probably going.
And it was through them that Velma actually met her next fella, Stuart Taylor, who was Dolly's nephew. But Velma did not seem to get on so well with Dolly herself. And just like old times, when things got tough, Velma's pill taking took an uptick. She couldn't ever really quite manage the drugs for any length of time. And Mr. Edwards, his health problems suddenly got worse, which probably wasn't that surprising. He was 95 years old, after all.
Okay.
But he did pass away rather quickly. And after he died, Velma actually stayed on at Dolly's house helping her, even though she had begun to hate her. Those were Velma's words. Velma felt that Dolly treated her just like her mother did, condescendingly. For Velma, there was an easy and obvious solution to that problem.
Of course there was.
Yes. She bought more poison. And she gave Dolly that poison one evening. And the next day, Dolly was gone. After a terrible time of suffering from the poison. Velma wrote that she had so divorced herself from the act that she did not even connect it with the cause of Dolly's death in her own mind. And I can't really wrap my mind around that.
I was just thinking, I don't know if I believe that. Like, yes. Like, how do you not, you're giving somebody poison. How do you not know it's going to poison them?
Right. Right. You have to be really deluded to convince yourself that it's not causing what you want it to cause.
Exactly. And I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah. At this point, I'm thinking Velma should stay away from any type of caregiving job.
Yes.
It's obviously not her calling. And
she's probably taken their pills, too.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah. She's probably stealing them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she didn't enjoy this job. But shortly after that, she took another caregiving job.
Oh, no.
With another elderly couple, John Henry and Record Lee. And of course, it didn't take long for Velma to start feeling the pressure of taking care of elderly people. And she just couldn't take it. She was feeling angry and resentful. And so once again, she bought poison and she gave it to Mr. Lee. And once again, he suffered miserably before succumbing to the poison, and he died soon after. And once again, she detached herself from taking any responsibility by convincing herself that he had died from a bad heart. After all, that's what the medical report stated. That was three once agains. Did you catch that?
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
So have you been keeping track of the number of people that she's killed so far?
No.
Okay. There were four so far that we know of.
Oh, my gracious.
We'll recap it at the end.
Okay.
It was at this point that Velma took a night shift job at a nursing home. And she also began dating Stuart Taylor. If you remember, she had met Stuart when she was working for Dolly, and he was Dolly's nephew.
Yes.
Okay. So they took up together. And it was a bad situation from the beginning. Velma had her addiction, and Stuart was a severe alcoholic. It's like she's drawn to this.
What,
yeah.
What is she doing?
I don't know. And you can imagine how they clashed.
I'm sure.
They would argue horribly and then make up. And nonetheless, they talked about getting married. But the relationship was just terribly dysfunctional. So at one point, Stuart found out about Velma's past incarceration from the bad check writing. She had not told him about that. And so after that, she says he held that over her head. And every time they would argue or something, he would bring up those bad checks and threaten to tell people and just kind of, you know, hold
make
it.
Her look bad.
Yeah. And that, and she hated that. And she actually had stolen some checks from him as well. And so he would threaten to report her if they got in an argument.
Okay. I can see that with drug addicts.
Yes.
You know, you're, yeah.
Yeah. It's just an ugly situation. The whole thing was just rife with that type of behavior from both of them. And so at some point, Stuart realized, okay, they had gotten engaged, but he was not going to, he was definitely not going to marry Velma.
Smart guy.
Yeah. But they did keep seeing each other off and on.
Maybe not so smart.
But we'll see. After Velma had a surgery, it was part of a breast that she had removed due to cancer. She was staying with Stuart during that time because he was helping her out. And so he took her into town to pick up her post-op prescriptions. And while at the drugstore, she was browsing the shelves, picking up a few other things that she needed. And I bet you can guess what she bought.
Poison.
Mm-hmm. Ant and rat poison. And in keeping with her pattern of dealing with undesirable situations, she gave it to Stuart that evening.
Okay.
Now, all this time, Velma had been attending church sporadically, and they decided to go to a gospel meeting that evening. I envision it was probably something like a revival.
Right.
You know, that's very common here in the Bible Belt. You get like a week-long meeting of preaching and singing, and it's getting people stirred back up in their zeal for the Lord. And I just find it so bizarre that she put poison in his tea and some beer, and then they headed off to church.
I know. I wonder if she was like under any conviction. Does she mention that?
No. No, she mentions like that she didn't think a thing of it.
Oh my goodness. I feel guilty if I like I'm barked at my husband.
Right, before church.
I'm like, Lord, forgive
exactly.
me.
Well, midway through that meeting, Stuart begins to get sick. He decides he's going to go out and wait in the car, and Velma stays to the end of the meeting. And when they got home, he did take a turn for the worse. Velma mentioned, well, maybe you should go to the doctor. She called his daughter to tell her, oh, Stuart's really sick. And so they called the doctor. Well, the flu had been going around. In fact, Stuart's daughter had the flu and they had been around her. And so they thought it was just the flu. And even during all this time, Velma says that she convinced herself that she was actually trying to help Stuart because she called the doctor and his daughter. And so finally, the doctor calls in a prescription. And they think, oh, it's going to take care of it. But, you know, actually, it's not going to take care of it because he doesn't have the flu, right?
Right.
Okay. He suffered with his symptoms for 3 whole days.
Oh, my goodness.
And they ended up taking him to the hospital where he eventually passed away after a lot of suffering.
Bless his heart.
Yep. Well, when one of the doctors suggested an autopsy, Velma quickly agreed that was a good idea.
Okay, so she was getting cocky.
She was. That's what I was going to say. It's kind of curious because when Jennings had been poisoned, she had been terrified that they were going to find arsenic and find out what she had done. And they didn't. And she was even worried about that after her mom. And now she's at the point where she's like, oh, yeah, get an autopsy. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So I thought, she is becoming very confident in her actions there.
She's skilled.
She is. Obviously, when the medical report came back with the finding of arsenic,
good.
She had a surprise coming.
Yes.
So the police detectives made a trip to see Velma. All right. Now, here's a side note. During that time, the police had actually received an anonymous call who said, Velma is responsible for his death, and there are probably others.
Oh, my gracious. Okay.
Yep. And so they didn't know whether to take that seriously. But when that autopsy came back, they knew.
Do we know who gave that tip now?
We do know who.
Okay. Is that coming?
That's coming. And I'm going to wait. It's going to be in part 2.
Okay.
Okay. So detectives went to her house. They picked her up. Once again, when they got her to the station, they read her rights, and then they questioned her for about 3 hours. She later said that she had actually quickly taken several pills before she left her house to calm her down, to take the edge off. And so during the questioning, her mind's like really fuzzy. She can't keep track of what she's being asked or what she's already answered. But they eventually do take her back home. And she went to work that night as usual and never mentioned it to anybody. However, over the weekend, her son Ronnie actually got word from somebody that they were actually getting ready to arrest her for the death of Stuart. So he went to her and he was able to convince her to turn herself in. And so once they went back to the station and she turned herself in, they asked her again if she had killed Stuart. And this time she answered yes.
Wow. Did she make that confession to her son? Do you know?
She did. Really? At first she denied it. Okay. And then later she kept telling him they're going to think I killed Stuart. And then finally he got her to admit it and he said, you need to go turn yourself in.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So that time they do continue to question her and they ask her, why did you try to kill Stuart? And she explained, I wasn't trying to kill him. I was just trying to make him sick. And then they then asked her if there had been others because they were already suspicious of that. And she also replied, yes. Wow. And then Velma started talking. So that's where I'm going to stop this episode today. We're going to pick it up on the next episode where we're going to talk about what happens after that. I do hope you'll listen to that one. It talks about the legal proceedings that happen as well. But also there are some twists and turns in that story and much more to be revealed. But let's recap. At this point, we know that Velma has killed Jennings Barfield, which was her second husband, her mother, Lillian, the elderly lady, Dolly Edwards, that she worked for, and Stuart Taylor, her own again, off again boyfriend. So that's four people that we know about. That she has admitted to. And although we know about it at this point in the story, the authorities don't know yet all of those. They just know that there are others.
Well, okay. Can I ask one question before we end? So what about her first husband in the fire?
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think?
I think she killed him.
Okay. Well, we will talk about that again later. We will talk about that again. I promise.
All right. Well, I'm excited. So we'll see you guys in 2 more weeks.
Yes, more weeks.
Now, those were some hard times. Hey, just a quick reminder, if you're enjoying the podcast so far, please rate us on whatever platform you're listening from. And if you happen to be listening from Apple Podcasts, rate and leave us a review. That helps us in the algorithm. It's not easy to get noticed among so many other awesome podcasts. So that's where y'all come in. We appreciate your help in every single one of you. One of the best ways, of course, for us to get noticed is just good old-fashioned word of mouth. So tell your mamas, daddies, brothers, sisters, cousins, and friends to check out Hard Times and True Crimes. Oh yeah, and we just started an Instagram and Facebook, so we'd love to have y'all follow us there as well. And if you want to leave case suggestions or just want to drop in and say hello, message us on our website, hardtimesandtruecrimes.com. Thanks so much.